Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. I'm honored to have you listening. I wish it was in your car right now on the way to work, but unfortunately, you're like me, probably hiding from your family with a glass of wine somewhere, worried about finances. I really do hope everybody is staying positive. Again, I say this maybe more for myself. This is going to end, and we are all going to be having cocktails or eating the food we want with the people we love soon. I promise. It's coming. On today's show, I'm going to talk with Fred Dame. Him and I got together for a glass of wine and talked for quite a bit about a bunch of different subjects. Some stuff coming up on SOM TV. We talk about his history at the Sardine Factory, his battle with Burns Steakhouse. We talk about Wall Street, the film, and how it changed port consumption in the United States a bit. We talk about his thoughts on coronavirus. He opens up a bottle of wine from Dow Vineyards where he works, and he is quite the salesman. But before that, we have a couple things coming up on SOM TV, actually quite a bit this week. Sabato Zegaria, a master sommelier, does an intro to Nebbiolo, which if you're a wine person, is probably one of your favorite red grapes. It's just one of the greatest. And so that's up there. We have our first episode of Chef's Notebook, a big new series we have coming that ranges all sorts of stuff that top chefs and major chefs around the world know. What we have coming up this week is an episode on chimichurri. We filmed it down in Argentina with the head chef of a restaurant called Siete Fuegos, one of the better restaurants in all of Argentina. And it's a great little piece. We also have an oral history of Psalm 3 with Fred Dame, which is it's exactly what you imagine. Fred also will do a visual piece on this Wall Street film and port and cigars and all of that. And then we have a Food and Wine 411 coming up with Master Sommelier Bobby Stuckey. That is kind of what he's had to go through with all of his restaurants and such. That'll also be coming up in a podcast as well later this week. So lots of stuff coming, and then a couple seasons of a travel show and other things. So I am beyond delighted to have all of you here. Just so you know, our game blinders that we invented about blind tasting is going up for pre-order, maybe even up for pre-order this moment. So I would get on those because the last time we offered these, they sold out pretty much immediately, and we anticipate the same for that. So our blinders card game is going up, and if you're not a member of SOM TV, there's a 7-day free trial. So please give it a try. We have some pretty staggering announcements coming that I wish I could say right now. I'm not allowed. But next week, maybe later this week, I certainly will be. So there's lots and lots to talk about SOM TV. Without further ado, my conversation with the one and only Fred Dame. Fred, why don't we start this off? How long have we been in quarantine? Where are we at right now?
Whoa. Wow. It seems like decades. No, I think we've been under here just over 3 weeks, and they're getting very, very specific here in the glorious city of San Francisco. They just ticketed one of my daughter's girlfriends the other day for holding hands with her boyfriend. $250 each.
Really?
In the city, yeah. Welcome to California. But I've had a chance to drink some wines that I haven't thought about drinking in a while.
Well, hold on. Let me first ask you, why are you spending your days? What are you doing?
Well, I'm sorry. My wife is prompting me here not to say things that I probably shouldn't. No, I do get a chance to walk the dog, which is always a great pleasure. I've spent some quality time with my wife and my son. I kept my daughter, who goes to the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, because it's far safer in Tuscaloosa than it is here. And pretty much, we drink wine. We caught up on every movie we wanted to see for the last decade, right? With a month left or 2 months left. We actually went out and purchased Roku. We're sitting here salivating every day waiting for it to arrive. And most of all, I think I've read more books in the past 2 weeks than I have in the previous 2 months.
Any books or movies you want to tell people to watch or read?
Ford versus Ferrari. I've watched it 8 times. I am going to own it. I'm going to watch it at least once a week. I mean, it's an amazing story, of what I hope Ford and GM did for the Grand for Le Mans, they can do for COVID-19, and I think they're quite capable of it. There's a line in there where Henry Ford says to Carroll Shelby, a bomber rolled off that line, right? at the Rouge plant in Florida. A bomber rolled off there every hour during World War II. I'm quite sure we can do the things that we need to do. But you know, there's been, I have to say that the series Yellowstone just fascinates me. We've caught up we're big junkies for Bull, the series. And we don't miss a Dateline. I mean, Dateline is critical mass around here. You cannot miss Dateline. We just want to see if we're on it.
All right, that's good. All right, tell me what you're drinking right now. What do you want to open? What are you drinking?
I got something cool today, and I thought that I'd make this interesting because, you know, we haven't hung out and drunk wine in a while there, amigo, right? Ever since Jackson almost went down in my pond at the Duck Club, you know, which was a beautiful thing to watch. And ever since I just shot over your head. And next time I say duck, man, you better duck, okay? But I brought a wine today. Actually, I had it. So, you know, I work for Dow Vineyards in Paso Robles, and but the wine today is kind of an interesting wine. We only made 4 barrels, and it's a clonal trial. The one thing about working for these guys, for the Dow brothers, is they're constantly looking to improve. And so we have all kinds of clonal trials going on. And 412 is a particular interesting one for me because this is it's a Bordeaux clone. It's an early ripening Bordeaux clone of Cabernet Sauvignon. This is 100% Cabernet Sauvignon. 20 months in new French oak, but only 14.7 alcohol. But this wine just kind of fascinates me because it has in some ways the elements of Merlot as an early ripening variety, but at the same time it produces a wine of significant power, but without wrecking tannin structure, and without overly dominant acidity. But because our phenolics are so high at Dow Mountain, because of the soil, and this is what Chelichev told us in 64 was going to happen. I mean, he was right. It has produced a wine of incredible character. And for 100% Cabernet, you know, I used to poo-poo Cabernet Sauvignon, right? You know, 100% Cabernets. I mean, they became so out of fashion, you know, and everybody had to have this and everything else. But then I was thinking, you know, the last 1949 Inglenook I had, which was one of John Daniel's last vintages, 100% Cabernet was magnificent. And I did the retrospective for Charles Krug for the Napa Valley Vintners Association 3 years ago now. And we tasted wines from Peter Mondavi Senior Cellar that had sat untouched since the day they were released. Charles Krug Vintage Select back to 59, 100% Cabernet Sauvignon, and they blew everybody away. They were just magnificent. I could teach a course in Cabernet Sauvignon on what's in this glass. It's a perfect profile of Cabernet Sauvignon. So, am I a little sad to open this wine today? Yes, I am. Because this is probably one of the few bottles outside of the library I left standing in the world today. But at the same time, I'm glad I did it because I haven't had it for a year, and it really reminds me of exactly how great the 2016 vintage was in Paso Robles. And that was...
How much does that bottle cost?
I don't know if... probably over $100, I would imagine. I don't know. I get mine for free, Jason. I'm going to be really honest about you when it's Dow Wines. But I think it's $125, something like that. But I wanted to drink it today because it's just starting to show its character. And with Cabernet, I try to be patient, but I love the flowering of it. And not the flowering like during harvest, but I love when I open it. I love the first 30 minutes of it because then you see what the potential of a great Cabernet Sauvignon is going to be. And this wine just opens like a rose, man. It's just like it's supposed to do. It does everything it's supposed to do. It's rich, it's lust, it's going to last. It's got plenty of, probably outlive me for no problem. And it is, but it's not, nothing dominates it. And that's what always scares me when I have, you know, pure wines like this 100% Cabernet and a lot of new oak and things like that. You think it's just going to be a beast coming out of there. But it really has been quite gentle. And I find it to be very, very appealing. I really like to pull a couple of steaks. I think I've got a back freezer, pull out some of that venison from Georgia that I took last year, and I think I'm going to do me a backstrap with the rest of this bottle on the grill tonight, and it's going to be an absolute perfect match of food and wine.
I love it. You're a good salesman for your winery, Fred.
yeah, well, at least it wasn't. We're not talking about the deer, are we?
No, you're not very kind to deer, but you are very kind to your employer.
What do you think I took this job for? I came out of retirement to do this, man. Right? Because this is the last frontier. I get to relive now.
What's the last frontier? Paso Robles?
It's the last frontier, my friend. Hello, wake up. Where you been?
I mean, what's the last frontier?
This is what Napa was in the 70s. I mean, all these people are pulling together. And you know, we had the Zinfandel, we had the Road Rangers, we had all those things. But Chelyuchov said in 64, this is Cabernet country. And lo and behold, you know, one of my favorite mentors was right again. God rest his soul. I get to, listen, this is selfish for me, Jason. I'm not going to lie to you and to the people on Psalm TV. When I talked to the Dow brothers, I really wanted to call it. I called it. You know, I didn't work for like 5-6 months. And then my wife decided it was a good idea for me to find something for me to do that was interesting, i.e. get out of the house, which was how I translated it. I talked to the Dow brothers. I worked with them when I was in distribution for like 6 years. And they're just committed to quality. Everything we do is the best. And then I got to know all the other producers in Paso, and I saw where the region was heading. And it's exactly really like Napa was when I started going there when there were 72 wineries. I mean, I used to buy Stag's Leap wine cellars for $75 a case. It's the naissance, huh? And for one glorious moment at the end of my career, I get to relive it again. I get to relive it one more time.
All right, let's talk about the end of your career. So, okay, you came out of retirement to take this job. Is this the last job you're going to have?
This is it. I don't do exams anymore. I don't teach anymore. This is for them and this is for me. You know,
you wouldn't come out like Rocky, like Mickey and Rocky to train somebody at the end. I mean,
well, when I look at my track record, particularly in the movie Psalm, I have to really think that.
Yeah, trust me. That movie's made me do a lot of rethinking.
I'm going to leave
as well.
That one on the table. Okay.
Fair enough. No, fair enough.
Listen, I'm very proud of those guys. You know, they've done great things, and you know, and you know, their paths have taken them many places. But it was a glorious time. But I also believe that there comes a point in your life where the people that you've taught, it's their turn, right? And you hope the values, you hope the integrity, the passion, the commitment, the things that you hope you've instilled in your students is passed on. And as I always told them, I never took a dime from a student in my life. Not once, not ever, all those years. And I always told them, you owe me one thing, my friends. You owe me the next you. And until that debt is paid, you'll be hearing from me. And to that, I remain firmly committed.
Are the guys in Psalm, the guys that were in the film, are they returning that debt?
Not yet. But I have hope.
Okay, fair enough.
I have hope.
Let's talk about what's going on right now with every restaurant shut down, every winery shut down. What's going to happen? How's this going to change the industry? What do people do now?
I'm buying shares in Safeway, man. You know, it's funny because we look at our numbers every day, and we look at the industry and all the things. You know, we get all these reports and all these things we do, and of course, our on-premise business is just—I mean, it's like a zero, right? I mean, it's just they're not open, you know. And the great things that even Kentucky has finally come to their senses, and the governor's going to sign a bill to actually let you, right, sell wine DTC, direct to consumer. What a thought. So I think that on the other hand, the retail industry, for instance, Albertsons Vons Pavilions, Phil Markert, who runs that program, was a very, very close friend of mine. He's been attempting to hire somms from restaurants to give him a job to work in the stores to recommend wines to people because I was in Grocery Outlet last week. Grocery Outlet fascinates me. I find it one of the most intriguing places in the world. And before this happened, I used to go there because you could see who was closing what out, who was changing distributors, who was dumping, who wasn't dumping, all those things. And it's just, you could always find these incredible values in there. But there was always plenty of wine stacked all over the place. I went to Grocery Outlet, and again, this is not exactly where, you know, where the rich and famous shop, right? But there was probably a third of the normal inventory on the floor that I normally see. And I was watching cart, so then I started watching. And you watch cart after cart after cart, 2, 3, 4 bottles of wine. So I think that the world is going to change here, my friend. It is going to change. And the velocity of what like you're doing here with Psalm TV, we're doing a Dow. We do Daniel Dow and I do a tasting of one of our wines every week. And we're getting incredible responses to it because people don't have much else to do. And if you make it intriguing, and we have very honest conversations about the winemaking, we're doing all those things, we take questions, all that. I mean, I think the world is going to change, my friends. You know, and that at the end of all this, I think the power of what we're doing here today will increase at least tenfold. I mean, as Jansa said, the day of the wine expert is over, my friend.
What's going to happen to all the restaurants, though? I mean, everybody we love is out of a job right now. They're terrified.
You know, I wonder how many reopenings there will be when it's all over with. Because we're really talking, you know, a minimum of 60 days. I really think 90 days before we're back in the swing of things.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a lot of time for people to be off, a lot of time for people to find other things to do. And particularly in higher rent districts, you know, in the cities in this country, it's going to be a very, very interesting situation. And I wish I had my crystal ball here to tell you what I think was going to happen. But I think it's going to be a tough time for the restaurant industry. But on the other hand, you know, from tough times comes great success. And, you know, this is one of the legendary tests of fire that not only the industry is going through, but the country is going through right now. You know, traditionally in the country, this great country we live in, you come out stronger. And I'm hoping that, you know, following the greatest generation, we respond the same way they did. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, that's very optimistic. I worry for people like, you know, Bobby Stuckey, who has so many employees and, you know, these guys, I just, my heart bleeds for them because they don't know what to do right now. I mean...
Well, fortunately, the federal government extended the unemployment benefits. But on the other hand, a lot of these people that are gratuity employees, that income is not replaceable. It is not replaceable, you know. And so as a result, I think it's, you're exactly right. This is going to be a tough time, a very, very hard time. And not just Bobby, but I mean, so many I can think of who are standing on the edge of the precipice looking over, right? And praying to God the earth doesn't come out from under him. I'm going to have a drink now, Jason. Thank you for cheering me up.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm drinking Habit wine. You know Jeff Fisher over in, he lives in L.A., but he makes wine in San Ynez. He's on one of the blind tasting sessions. He's a really good guy.
He's a really phenomenal
wine.
He's a really good guy.
He's a good
dude. Can we talk about happier times here?
Sure.
I want to talk to you about the Sardine Factory, which celebrated its 50th anniversary last year. Mild stomping grounds.
Okay.
You know, the second greatest wine list in America. I could never catch Bern Laxer and Bern Steakhouse in Florida. And I used to love it because I started chasing him back in 1982. And I used to go behind him at the Wine Spectator Grand Awards. I walk up behind him, I go to his ear, and I go, "Don't you die, old man, until I catch you." He started laughing. He goes, "Ah, Fred Dame of the Sardine Factory." And when he passed away, his wife, Gert, told me, she says, "I think you kept him alive another 10 years, Fred." If I put on 100, he put on 200. If I put on 20, he put on 400. I could never catch him. You know, he was the best.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had some interesting times like this. And one of the most interesting, you know, the Sardine Factory had its 50th anniversary last year. And how many fine dining restaurants, my friend, are left? Look at San Francisco.
That have gone 50 years?
Yeah.
Very few.
L'Etoile, Le Bourgogne, they're all gone. Ernie's, Doro's, Blue Fox, gone. Southern California, Scandia, Chasen's, Romanoff's, Brown Derby, they're all gone. All gone.
Brown Derby.
Still standing. Well, unless you go to Walt Disney World and you eat there, right?
Right.
So I did the 50th anniversary. It was so much fun because there was a lot of wines in the cellar there that I had bought. But I was thinking about some of the times that I had there and times of great trial and tribulation. And I started thinking about the 1980s. And I have a funny story to tell you. So when we were building the cellar, I had left the company to take the general manager of another restaurant. Ah, the young and impetuous, the things we do. Built them a pretty fine little wine program in Carmel. And then the owners of the Sardine Factory, who taught me, by the way, they're my son's godfathers, and they're like my dads, came, would never let me see their building facility and let me see it until they finished it. And then they took me to lunch, Ted Balistrieri did, and he goes, "We built this so you come back. When can you start? I want you to build me the greatest wine cellar in America." So I'm going to get my best shot. But, you know, they built this beautiful 14 feet underground. I mean, custom excavated, custom built cellars, all original heart redwood. Single table carved from a single redwood tree. I mean, every dream you'd ever want to do is a psalm, right? And all these catacombs to fill. Holes all over to fill with incredible wine. And I would guess today, I want to compliment today, I had two great suppliers in the day. It was a company called American Wine Merchants, a guy named Bruce Shipman that did all the importing, and his partner, Carrie Payne. But my two main suppliers, and this is the time, it was the perfect time to be doing this because the English inheritance laws have recently changed, and all that incredible old wine came on the market because to keep the pile, you had to sell the contents. And the wine cellar was the first thing to go. So that's when Glamis came on the market. All these incredible wines came blowing on the market, you know, for a song. So I bought a ton from Sotheby's, from Patrick Grubb, and a ton and a half from Christie's, from, I'm sorry to say, the recently late and great Michael Broadbent. One of the finest men I ever met, a mentor, and some of the most charming lunches I have ever had. And the world of wine is a lesser place without Michael Broadbent today. Is a lesser place.
Do you want to say who Michael Broadbent, explain who Michael Broadbent was for people who don't understand?
Head of the Christie's Wine Department, the author of the Great Vintage Wine Book. I mean, the first book that really since Hugh Johnson made a huge impact on wine, and particularly in the world of old wine. I mean, who else, all those tasting notes going back 50, 60, 70, wines to the 1700s. And you know, he was the most charming man. And I used to meet him at Le Gavroche in London. And it was always a pleasure. And I mean, the stories I could tell you about the wines I bought from him. You know, one time I had an email and then it came to me and it goes, we have 10, I used to like to buy out wines a lot from the Army-Navy stores. Because they used to buy a lot of really top-level Burgundy and Bordeaux for the officers' mess, for the British Army, the British Navy, and the RAF. And then they were kept in perfect storage, mainly in bunkers. And periodically, things would show up that they'd just put up for auction because, you know, they were no longer wanted. I remember one time, it was 10 cases of 1951 Lafitte. I'm like, 51 Lafitte? Who's going to buy 51 Lafitte? So I look it up, you know, I look at Michael's book. He says, you know, it's a serviceable vintage. So I call up and I go, what do you think? And he goes, you know, it's not the greatest Lafitte in history. He goes, but it's a perfectly fine Lafitte. And he goes, it's from the Army Navy store, so it's perfect. And I think I paid $10 a bottle, $120 a case. And I'm like, he goes, I have 10 cases. I think, what am I going to do with this? And I think, birthdays. So I bought it all. You know, for $10 a bottle, I think we put on the wine list for like $50 or $60, and we blew through it in like 3 months because everybody from 51 wanted to drink 51 Lafitte for $50. Right? It was so much fun back then, and I bought so many incredible wines from Michael Broadbent. I mean, wines from pre-phylloxera, 1860s, 1850s, 1840s, 1830s, and if when you buy old wine, Jason. You pay your money and you take your chances, right? There's no guarantees. But the few true bitches I ever really had over my time, they really made good for in another deal, and that was the absolute beauty of it. But one of the funny things about it was, at the end of the Sarnia factory cellar was this beautiful wall, but we had some two storage areas in the office, so there was all these kind of weird looking bins, odd sizes, right? I mean. This, I mean, all these weird things. I'm like, well, what the hell am I going to do with this? And I'm like, but, you know, you sit in the dining room at that beautiful, you know, 30-foot piece of slab of redwood from a single redwood tree, right? And what's one of the things you're sitting, that's where the host is going to sit and look at. So I got to have something beautiful in there. I got to have something old. What's cheap? So I sent a note to Patrick, and I sent a particular note to Michael, and he goes, oh, Fred, no question, port right now. Port's of value. And I was buying, like, 63s for $28 a bottle. And it came in, you know, half bottles, tappet hens, all these weird, odd sizes that only the English could come up with, and the Portuguese, particularly the Brits at this time, after the Treaty of Methuen, they kind of created the whole system. And that, lo and behold, I was able to cram all these weird-sized bottles in there and create this whole beautiful back wall, mostly these old wax capsules. You know how old port is, right, Jason? You know all those weird old necks and bottles? And man, I had a wall full of it. I bought it for a song, right?
50s, 40s, 30s, 20s, 10s, 1912 Coburn for a song, for a song. And it was beautiful. I'm like, man, wow, I did good on that. And I just sat there and looked, and I feel like I pull a half ball out and drink it with dinner and after dinner and bottle period just to keep things up, just make sure everything was good. And then do you remember the 80s? Were you alive in the 80s, Jason?
Yes, I was born in 1980.
Okay. You sort of missed the Wall Street era, right?
The return
of the Cuban cigar, Gordon Gekko, suspenders, and all these really brilliant Italian kids making bank, right? Making bank with really nowhere in the world to know how to spend it. And so one of my biggest and best customers was a small struggling company called Goldman Sachs. You might have heard of them. And then we had Merrill Lynch and all the rest of them, and because the wine cellar kind of became the place to be. And all of a sudden, port, because of all the cigar things, all those things, port just caught fire, absolutely caught fire. And in a year and a half, my whole port cellar was gone. So now what am I going to do? But it was amazing. I mean, we just erased 2 years of work in a year and a half.
I think, yeah, it's great. Anything that gets people drinking port. I mean, I'm a fan of port. We had that bottle even in Paris, and I'm a big fan.
You know, I remember.
Amazing, a movie can have that kind of an effect.
You know, it did. It had a huge effect. And I was thinking, I was just remembering another story that I had to catch Bernstein, catch him sleeping at something. So I spent like 3 years amassing this collection of Chateau Echem. I had like 60 vintages, 70 vintages. We took a famous picture, we lined them all up down the table, down that big, beautiful redwood tree, and shot the picture with all those vintages, right? And I'm like, ha, I got the old man now, right? And about a year later, I get a note that he has not only created a bigger collection of Sauternes, but he's opened an entire dessert room dedicated to Sauternes. A whole addendum to Burns Steakhouse.
In regards to Burns versus the Sardine Factory, that is a story that's coming early next year to SomTV. That's happening. So I want to make sure that everybody knows. I can't wait. That story is out of control. I mean, it's one of these things that just people won't believe.
It's Ford versus Ferrari, dude. You got to get Larry O'Brien, the master, right? Who worked there as Som.
Uh-huh.
Got to get Dave Laxer, right? Myself, and oh man, the stories we could tell.
Yeah, very good, very good. I can't wait. And then, we're gonna do this talk what, once every 3 days or so from now on?
Oh, how about once a week?
Once a week, okay. Let's do it. What, can you tease any bottles you're gonna open up?
I'm going to look around down there. I've got all these wines, all these California wines from the 90s and early 2000s that are now 20 and 25 years old. I tell you what, I opened up a 2000 Darius, which I totally forgot I had. And I mean, that bottle of wine blew me away. It was bloody beautiful. It was superb. So now I've got all these wines that are 20 and 25 years old. And I think we're going to stick with California for a bit. I mean, I've got plenty of European stuff back there. But these older California wines, now that they have 20, 25 years of age, and I've had them since day one, this is beginning to fascinate me. Because what's the most asked question the master sommelier gets besides what's your favorite wine? Is how long is it going to age? And as I always tell everybody, yeah. Well, 95% of the wine consumed in the United States of America is consumed when they ate out over this purchase. So who cares? Call me crazy. This could last 24 hours. Whew. This could last a week, 7 days. But lo and behold,
yes.
I have wines down there that are now, 15, 20, 25 years old of some pretty famous producers that were gifts to me mostly from producers. And I think we're going to have a little run at those just for shits and giggles.
Great. All right. So next time we meet up, you're going to open up some special stuff. I can't wait.
Yep. Absolutely.
Good stuff, my man.
Hey, listen, can I say thank you, my old friends, through all the Saw movies and everything else? I have enjoyed every moment of our time together. The epic Duck Club trip, our time in Paris, and you guys are real craftsmen, and I'm just honored to be back
back with you again doing something special and during these tough times that I hope brings some joy to the people out there in the field that need a little love right now.
Fred, you're a good man. Thank you, brother.
All right, take care, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. I want to say also, if you are out of work in the service industry or anything touching that type of industry and you can't afford SOM TV, we want to know. Send us a private message on Instagram, our SOM TV account, or the SOM Films account, or on Twitter, and let us know, and we will find a way to get you a subscription. That's, you shouldn't have to not travel to wine regions just because you're stuck in your house right now, okay? All right, everybody, thanks for listening. New podcast coming up very, very soon with Bobby Stuckey. All right, bye-bye.